It's Tony Mac and the Triplet with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mac and the Triplet.
That's right. Welcome in, everybody. Tony Mac and the Triplet. Aaron and I are here in studio. We're ready to go. We text all week about what we want to do on the show, telling each other to get prepared. We get in here, it's a different feel. We get to look at each other and kind of engage in what we want to talk about. And you just got the feeling this morning. It's going to be a good show. And we're going to start off with telling you how you can get involved with that. You can call in and tell us, give us a topic you want to talk about, comment on the topics that we've got coming to you. You can call at 866-485-9867. I will be answering the phones. Get in here. Tell us what you want to talk about. Or you can follow us at Twitter, at Tony Mac Triplet. At Tony Mac Triplet, or you can follow me individually at Tony Mac UMP or Aaron at A Trip Tennis. All right, we got all the formalities out of the way. Let's get into this because we have a lot of stuff to talk about, and it's going to be a lot of fun, including here in a little bit, we're going to give you our 1 through 14. We're going to run them down, best quarterback situations in the SEC. That's right. We're going to give you our best quarterback situations in the SEC along with a lot more. But first, let's jump into it. Aaron, how was the drive over here? How you doing this morning?
Well, when thinking about when I was I got out of the house. You know, I live my wife and I. We're living with our in-laws or my in-laws, her mom and dad, for right now until we can get our own place. But I park outside, and I'm used to that. When I was growing up, my dad said when we got a car, he said, we're not allowed to park in the driveway. That was just the rules. Kids couldn't park or kids couldn't park in the garage. So I've always parked in the driveway, always parked outside. So I park outside still and walk outside. And it's a little chilly and it's August. It's a little cold because I get up, I leave about 7 o'clock and I'm like, it feels good,
doesn't it?
But noticeably cooler than it has been recently. So, and I get in the car and all of a sudden it dawns on me because, you know, we're going to keep this show going every week and every week, you know, it's going to get a little colder probably. And I was like, you know, by mid season, it's going to be cold when I get out this morning, when I get out of the car or when I go to the car and get out when I get here. But so that just now dawned on me because it feels like it's hot all the time. But
I'm going to let you know right now, the other thing to look forward to, you're really going to feel it not next week, but the week after and any other big week in college football. And that is, when you wake up and you're getting in the car and you've got that long drive, because I have about an hour drive every morning. It's not as far as you have to drive, but depending on traffic, it's like 45 miles. So, I mean, if there's no traffic, it doesn't take me an hour to get here. But you're going to be so ready to come in here and talk on the show, but that's going to be your secondary thought because you're going to be thinking about college football. You're going to want to get the show out of the way so we can get to college football. You're going to have this like rush of anxiety inside of you on the drive here, and you're going to want to get the show out of the way, but it's going to translate really well. There were many times I did that when Arky had the sports flood and I was running the board for him, where I didn't care about the sports flood going in. I was like, let's just get this over with. Let's get it over with. Let's get to the football. And the show's not prominently on your mind to where you're not wearing yourself out thinking about it. And then you get in there and you end up having a really good show. So we're going to have many of those to come. Not saying that this show's not going to be good, because this show's going to be really good. Now, let's jump into it with the first thing we're going to talk about. I believe you already posted it on Twitter. I could be wrong, but your shirt of the week.
Yes.
What are you wearing today?
My team shirt of the week. This week's edition, as I said on Twitter just moments ago, is the Jacksonville State Gamecocks. Local team. My wife will graduate from Jacksonville State in December, but really the closest major university to where I live and where I'm from. Have a really good football program in recent years, and I've been to the campus many times. Nice little campus. But the Gamecocks getting the team shirt love today.
Yeah, if you want to see a nice red Gamecock, you can go check that out on Twitter at Tony Mack, or at Tony Mack and the at Tony Mack Triplet. Sorry, I keep reading the ampersand there at Tony Mack Triplet. But you keep saying me and my wife, and you've only been married a couple months. How does that feel? Because in a couple months, I will be married.
Well, there goes my mic. In a couple months,
I'll be married. anybody listening to the Cube Show knows the troubles we're having here. I've got two mics right in my face, just in case. But in a couple months, I'll be married. So I've kind of held off on saying my wife. I still say my fiance, and by the time we get married, we would have been together. We would have been engaged a year and a half, so it'll feel different calling her my wife. But I think it'll feel better. How does it feel saying my wife? And it seems like you've gotten used to it pretty quick.
It's much easier to say because fiance is a mouthful to say in a sentence. So it's much easier to say my wife, and it sounds right. I mean,
yeah,
we've been together for 4 years. Over 4 years now. We actually got married on the anniversary of when we started dating. So we've been together for over 4 years now. So really, the change was a big deal for especially the day and for about that week we were gone to our honeymoon. But we got back and we kept being like, we're married. But then like I don't know. It's different, and I think it's different because you're so comfortable with that person.
Right.
And it's just such a, it's very difficult to describe.
I understand what you're saying.
But
speaking of comfortable, if you're uncomfortable with this next segment, you might just want to turn the other ear. Arky, you specifically, because we're going to get into a segment I've really been waiting to get into since we started the show. It's something new. We didn't do it on the podcast, and that is our crying Jordan face of the week. Aaron and I each will pick something goofy. Something stupid that's been going on in the world of sports, and we're gonna put it up on Twitter and put the crying Jordan face on it, and we're gonna call it our crying Jordan face of the week. Aaron will have one, and I'll have one. They'll be separate, but it's mainly just to it's mainly poking fun. I made it the crying Jordan face because Arky hates them. My boss Arky hates the crying Jordan face. So that's the reason we're doing it with that. But it's a way to just let you know that we notice all the stupid stuff that's going on around sports right now. And I might end up changing mine before the day's over with. This microphone might end up being my crying Jordan face of the week because I'm telling you right now, it's already annoying. But since I have the microphone right now, the one we're tossing around, I'm going to start with my crying Jordan face of the week. And that is Oklahoma State. Why Oklahoma State? I'll tell you. I don't know if you guys remember the story, but back in October, it was in the middle of the football season, so a lot of people might have just put this to the wayside. They got this committee together called the AFCA, I believe. It's where you whatever national championship coaches, I guess, that are out of coaching that are still alive and wanted to be a part of this committee, got together, and there was a period of time before the AP poll was introduced. I believe like 49 or something like that, late 40s, early 50s, before the AP was introduced, there wasn't really a committee or anything like that, a poll to give award national championships to anybody. So, and there was like a 20-year period or like somewhere from the 20s to the late 40s. So they got this coaching committee together to award those national championships. And They don't have any game film to go back and look on. They're basically looking at record and trying to look at stats and look at and rankings and stuff like that, I guess. But if you're looking at stats from the 20s, 30s, and 40s, knowing what stats are now, nothing's going to overwhelm you. So there's nothing really special about this committee or about the championships they're awarding, honestly. I mean, it's even in the 40s, that's 70-something years ago. So it really shouldn't matter, really. I mean, if you get awarded, oh, cool, that's a national championship. That's cool that they recognize this. Cool. But if you're Oklahoma State, it apparently is deeper than that. They're celebrating. They were awarded the 1945 national championship by this committee. And they're celebrating it like they won it 2 years ago. They're putting it up in their stadium as we speak. They're putting up 2014 or 1945, whatever. I'm pulling up the picture now because I have my Jordan faces on it. 1945 national champions. They're broadcasting this in their stadium now as if they won it last year because it's something to celebrate because they've never won anything before. That is not the tradition of winning. That is not a school that is – you're basically admitting to yourself and your fans right there by putting this up in your stadium, we are okay with being the stepchild to Oklahoma. If Oklahoma has seven national championships, if the committee had awarded them one in 1930, eventually they might, you know, sneak that somewhere in there. But, oh, yeah, we were also awarded this one. They're not putting it up. They're not rushing to get it up in the stadium before this year starts. There's no way. Because they're used to winning. Programs like this aren't used to winning so much and being the stepchild so much to other programs that they're putting this up in their stadium as if it's something to be celebrated. So that is why they are my crying Jordan face of the week. And you can see that picture, that doctored up picture on Twitter. Aaron, I'm going to throw this mic over to you. Give me your crying Jordan face or faces of the week.
Well, I went a little bit different route. I went to I'm going to transition to the NFL when talking about my crying Jordan face, and it has to do with the Jacksonville Jaguars and Blake Bortles. As all of you know, Blake Bortles was the number 3 overall pick in the draft a few years ago, and when he was drafted, I said, you know, the Jaguars just set their franchise back another 5 years because he's not going to do anything in the NFL. It was a stupid, irrational pick, in my opinion. Nothing against Blake Bortles. Nothing. It's not personal. But I just thought it was an ignorant pick. And as it has shown over the past few years, he has been terrible.
Fantastic. Oh, wait. Never mind.
Fantastic. And his garbage time stats are actually pretty decent. I saw a link to an article the other day that showed Blake Bortles' stats in garbage time. Yeah, but it's because he's put his team behind by 30 points already.
I think it was a couple of years ago that he was second in the NFL in total touchdowns because of garbage time. So
he had a very bad preseason game if nobody watched it the other day, and I didn't watch it personally, but it was atrocious. And Doug Marrone, the new head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, has announced basically an open competition at the quarterback position in Jacksonville between Bortles, a top 5 overall draft pick just a few years ago. Chad Henne, seasoned veteran, been with the Jags for several years out of Michigan. Seasoned, you know, a kind of a everywhere kind of guy, backup, you know, not going to lead your franchise kind of player. And then Brandon Allen from Arkansas. So that's open season at the quarterback spot. So my crying Jordan face is Blake Bortles. Congratulations on having to earn your starting job after being a top 5 pick. And what is that, like his third year starting or going into like his fourth season as the starter, and he's having to fend off Brandon Allen from Arkansas? You know, I hope Brandon Allen wins the job. I was always a fan of him at Arkansas. I hope he wins it. But
you know what the college equivalent to this is? This sounds like the Texas A&M quarterback battle right now.
It's not quite as serious, but you do have one guy on Texas A&M's roster who has gotten some playing time before, so I do see the similarities. But
yeah, and the fact that they're really not all – none of them are very good.
No, none of
them. If your front runner is Jake Hubenak because he has starting experience, you're in trouble. And kind of like this situation. Oh, you mean our starting quarterback going into his fourth year finally earned the job? Wow, that's great. You guys suck. So did you finally get that up? Did you get your doctored picture up on there?
I am currently in the process right now.
Make sure you tag yourself in it from the show Twitter. I did that. I got excited. I tagged myself. I went to the show Twitter, and I put up my crying Jordan face, and I tagged myself, and I said, Tony Max, crying Jordan face of the week. And then my Twitter buzzed, and I got a notification. I got excited because I thought someone tweeted into the show, but it was me tweeting at myself. But guys, go check that out, @TonyMacTriplet At Tony Mack UMP, at A Trip Tennis, our Crying Jordan Faces of the Week. You're going to get a bonus one this week. It's going to be this freaking microphone, because on the break I'm taking a picture, and I'm going to put it up there. I'm going to put a nice Crying Jordan face on that for you guys. All right, well, that's a segment that I'm so glad we've gotten out there, because I've looked forward to that for a long time, because it's going to be fun. There's a lot of stupid things you see in college football every week, and what better way to encompass that than, you know, putting a Crying Jordan face on it and talking about it. So look forward to that, especially during football season. Think about all the, like, another great one would just be going and finding every single Texas player on the field you can find and putting a Crying Jordan face on them after Kansas beat them with a walk-off field goal a year ago. Stuff like that. Like, there's moments all throughout the season that are just ridiculous that you're going to want to put a Crying Jordan face on. All right, well, we're not going to jump into the SEC quarterback thing yet. That's going to need some time, because that's going to take up a good portion of the show.
Before we move any further, when we talked about my team shirt of the week this week, this upcoming week, I will actually be taking a poll on Twitter from the show's Twitter feed, and I'll tweet two or three choices of a team shirt that I could potentially wear on Saturday. So give me your input. Vote on the choices that I give you, and the one with the most votes I will wear on Saturday and tweet it as my team shirt of the week, something that we forgot to mention earlier when talking about this week's.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to get a look at what his shirt looks like, he's not going to post pictures of them. He's going to post up a poll, and you're going to vote which one you want to see. And then Saturday, if the one you voted for wins, he's going to wear it. And he'll post a picture, and you can see whether you like it or not. Aaron has just a plethora of team shirts,
and it won't always be college football. I've got NFL. I've got some of other professional sports. So it really mostly college and university affiliated, but it could be anything. I would argue that's half my wardrobe is team shirts of some kind somewhere. So I'm pretty sure that when I moved in, and I was trying to, I mean, my wife has a nice walk-in closet, a lot of space, you would think, and she had it filled up mostly, and she was like, here's one drawer and part of a place to hang stuff on. And I was like, where are my shirts going to go? And she was like, how many t-shirts do you have? And I was, and she knows how many t-shirts I have. And I think she wants me to get rid of some, but there's no way. I love all my t-shirts.
Speaking of your wife, we got a tweet from Falling on My Laces, a longtime lover of the Sports Flood, Tom Abraham show, and in the Cube show. A really loyal listener, and he's also been very, very, very good to us. He tweets in, he says, being engaged is like boxing with 12-ounce gloves. But when she says I do, her gloves come off and her punches are live. Hashtag good luck. So, Aaron, you might be experiencing a little bit of that right now. I've lived with my fiance for a year now, so I hope I hope I do doesn't change everything that drastically. But we'll see. That's a good tweet by him. We're gonna go into a break here in just a second. Aaron, I just saw your Crying Jordan face. It was very perfectly done. It looks great. But before we take a break, give you guys a little look ahead of what's coming next. We're going to talk about FAU. Yeah, that's right, Florida Atlantic, just because Lane Kiffin knows how to keep you interested. And how is he doing that this time? It's not by continuously taking shots and dropping these weird snide comments about Alabama. You know, I guess he's moved past that, and he's gone out and grabbed any, I guess, deadbeat player and coach you can think of, and brought it onto the staff, and it's almost like the longest yard now. Like, it's just a bunch of outlaws, and we're gonna tell you exactly who all that is, including the coaching staff, coming up next right here on Tony Mack and the Triplet, Sports Radio 730 103.9 at the UMP.
Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 the UMP WUMP.
Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplet. I've got to say, Aaron, I have to tell you, I love our bump music. I've got to say, Aaron, now that the mic's working again, Arky texting in saying, unplug it from the back and plug it back in. Works every time. Yeah, that's great until it happens mid-sentence, like it has this entire show. But I've got to say, I love our bump music. It gets me excited every time because we picked songs that just have great and just hit you musically right from the beginning. So they get me excited every time we come back. I get a good smile on my face. But I'm gonna smile this whole segment because we're talking about Lane Kiffin, and he's like the biggest troll if there were ever trolls in football. And he's the only one that can get away with what he's doing right now. He's got four last chance U stars on his roster. One of them, I guess, is the well. He's got three on the roster. One of them's a coach. But JF3 is in his fourth school in 5 years, and he's the only one that really is highlighted in that show that didn't really do anything other than have to be behind Coker and Winston. That's the reason he left, and now you see the show, and everybody's there because armed robbery. Hitting a woman. Joe Mixon didn't appear, but I mean, he just took a suspension. But I mean, you get there because you're doing something awful, and now you get put in that show, and those are the guys that are highlighted. And Lane Kiffin's taking these guys. And if it was anybody else, even if it was a school like FAU, you would still hear about it, and you would still, it wouldn't be as magnified as like if Alabama or Oklahoma did it, but you would still like, oh, wow, that's trashy for taking all these kids. But it's Lane Kiffin, so I think that's the reason he's getting away with it. Everybody's just so over the fact, and everybody just knows who Lane Kiffin is and how he does business, that they're okay with it. And they went 3-9, what, like 3 years in a row, and now he's there. They're not going to go 3-9. They're going to be a little better than 3-9, I think, especially because of the, regardless of what they did, the talent on this roster, these guys he brought in is great. But listen to some of the guys he's brought in. I know you guys know that JF3, obviously, has just transferred over there. But he's also got DeAndre Johnson, the Florida State guy. If you guys have watched Last Chance U this past season, he's the starting quarterback, and he's extremely freaking talented. Tim Bonner, the defensive end, the guy who likes Lil Boosie before every game, he's there. He was the one who was, in his words, wrongfully accused of having a weapon on campus, a gun on campus. And it doesn't just stop there. He has, on the coaching staff, even, just a bunch of rejects that screwed up at D1 schools. Clint Triggett didn't screw up anywhere. Clint Triggett's there, but Clint Triggett's moving up the ladder. It's a little different. He just recently, a couple years ago, retired from college football. But you have his brother. Yeah, Chris Kiffin's there. And he's facing allegations from his time at Ole Miss. And reportedly, he's confessed to those charges. And I guess they're going to rule on those soon. They're hearing Ole Miss's hearings on 9/11. But Chris Kiffin works there. And let's just say this, too. It wouldn't be a Lane Kiffin job. Lane Kiffin wouldn't be the head coach there if he didn't have another Kiffin working with the defense. His dad's followed him everywhere, including to FAU. His dad's a defensive assistant there. But his brother is Chris Kiffin is the co-defensive coordinator. And he's screwed up. And, you know, kind of blacked his eye at big Division I program. So he's at FAU. And then, Aaron, I'm going to let you talk about him because you love the hire. You think it's a heck of a hire for FAU. But let's not kid ourselves. The only reason that their offensive coordinator is Kendall Briles is because of what his dad did and how adamant he is at defending it.
Yeah, I think that Kendall Briles was the best hire that Lane Kiffin made this offseason. I thought it was a great hire from a football standpoint. But Lane Kiffin, you know, he's just an interesting conundrum as an individual and as a coach, because you look back on, you know, he started at – no, everybody forgets that Lane Kiffin was actually the head coach of the Oakland Raiders for a little bit until – and that was in the days of Al Davis's revolving door of head coaches. But when he came back, you know, Tennessee took a chance on him, and I thought it was a pretty decent hire at the time when Tennessee hired him. And then he came in with this, like, swagger, this attitude, this singing Rocky Top when we beat Florida kind of mentality. And he was coaching with what me and you and some of our friends like to call, he was coaching with a chip on his shoulder. He had a chip on his shoulder. He had something to prove when he came to Tennessee. So, and he had a lot of great recruits. If nobody remembers, probably Newkeese Richardson was a five-star athlete, great, great talent. But he was eventually dismissed for some off-the-field issues. I want to say I think he robbed a convenience store at gunpoint or something like that. But he had several guys like that at Tennessee. That was the year they almost beat Alabama in 2009. Terrence Cody blocked the field goal.
Rocky block.
But, you know, Kiffin was – I mean, they were 6-6, but he had brought this culture back that they had lost in the latter former years. They got it right. They got it back with Kiffin, and then he immediately left to take the job at USC. And I don't blame USC for offering him the job because I would have too in that situation. But I thought Lane Kiffin, had he stayed at Tennessee, would have been, you know, winning 9 or 10 games every season, having a really good team, just the way he had that mentality that he had brought. But then he went to USC, and he that swagger, that attitude, kind of died. It kind of died down a little bit at USC, and of course he was out in just a few years. And then he brought it back at Alabama. He brought back that Nick Saban went out of the box to try to do some more things unconventionally on offense. And Lane Kiffin, regardless of what you think about him, is a great offensive mind. He's a great offensive mind, great taste for the game. He knows how to use his players that he has and the talent that he has. And so when he took this job at FAU, players, athletes, they want to come play for him because they want to play for that offense that he can provide. And he's just a character, and I think he attracts those kind of guys want to play for him. So I think he was a good hire for FAU. I think Kendall Bryce was a great hire for his offense, and I think all these players are getting, regardless of what their backgrounds are, their history, are going to be great for this university as far as the football program, strictly speaking, on the field is concerned. And I think that within the next I expect them within 3 years, if everything, you know, goes as planned, which who knows with Lane Kiffin at this point, I could definitely expect them to contend for a Conference USA championship in the next few years.
Falling on my laces gets back in on Twitter. He says, I think there would be so much money to be made at FAU if Lane Kiffin allowed Netflix on campus. It'd be must-see. Now, regardless of whether he brought these players in or not, it would be must-see because it's Lane Kiffin. And you're exactly right. Anytime this guy opens his mouth, you want to hear what he said because it's usually a chippy comment about Alabama or just even getting things rustled. Like the reason that people think there's a quote-unquote quarterback controversy at Alabama has a lot to do with Kiffin keep opening his mouth. He keeps saying, no, Tua's got to see the field this year. He's too talented. He'll see that. He's going to get playing time. He'll see the field. He's keeping – even though he's not working there anymore, he's keeping Alabama and everybody on their toes. Absolutely, it'd be must-see. It would – I've never watched Hard Knocks other than keeping up with some of it this season because watching Jameis Winston in there is just a treat. But I think it would be better than that. I think you're exactly right. I think this would end all other football competition. Last chance you, if this was to stem from something else and be its own thing and had to compete with Last Chance You, this would blow Last Chance You out of the water. Everybody would wait to see what Lane Kiffin does. You'd get an inside look at how he runs things. But also, you would just get to hear him for an 8 to 10 episode season. So you're exactly right. That would be phenomenal. Wouldn't you'd watch it, right?
Yeah, and I don't really watch Last Chance U as it is, but if that
missing
were to,
out. You're missing
if,
out.
If that were to well, see, I'm not a big show binger in the first place. I like TV shows, and when I get into binging them, I will watch them constantly, but it's just it requires a lot of commitment, really, for me personally, because if I'm going to invest in a show, I want to sit there and I want to give it my full attention.
See,
most people like just to put them on, and then they're like, oh, I'm going to put this on, and I'm going to watch it, and while it happens, I'm going to take a nap, and then I'm going to say that I watched like 3 episodes. I binged like 5 episodes today. How many did you actually watch? Well, I was asleep for 4 of them. You know, I don't like doing that. If I'm going to commit to a TV show, I'm going to commit. Like,
and I'm
going to
go ahead and
commit.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now, I know she's listening, but the person you just described is my lovely fiance Jennifer Sewell. Let me tell you, she's gone back and watched Pretty Little Liars on Netflix so many times. And I ask questions sometimes. Sometimes she knows the answer. Sometimes she doesn't because it'll be on and it'll catch my ear. And I'm one of those people who, like, I can have a show on in the background, but it's a show that I've already seen and paid attention to. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. if it's something I haven't paid attention to and something catches my ear, I'm going to get into it, and I want to know everything about it, or whether I like it or not. And that's the case with Pretty Little Liars. Something will pop up, and I'm just curious. I'm like, hey, well, what happened here? Why is this happening? She'll be like, oh, I don't know. I don't remember. I came home last night from my other job. I got home about 11:30. I walked in the door, and what was Pretty Little Liars was on the TV, and it looked like something really important was going on. Whoever the bad guy is, A or whatever, is writing something, doing something really important behind the scenes, right? And you look on the couch, look in the kitchen, and nowhere, even downstairs, Jen's nowhere to be found. No wonder she doesn't know what's going on. She's upstairs in the bathroom brushing her teeth while something really, I'm assuming, an important plot point is going on the TV. So no wonder she's had to watch it like 7 or 8 times. But I'm one of those guys who will shamelessly binge. I was texting your brother the other day about Game of Thrones. He recently got into Game of Thrones, and I'm really excited because I love that show. I'm watching it through again for a third time. The first time, I did not pay attention to it, and it's a show you have to hang on every single word of this show, and I'm going back. This is the first time I'm going back watching it with closed captioning. So, you know, I'm really paying attention to it. And I told him he just started season 2, and he was like, yeah, I want to be done with season 2 before school starts. And I'm like, well, you know, you're in my head, I'm like, well, you're off Saturday. I was like, if I were you, I'd try to finish season 2 throughout the week and then Saturday get through season 3. And he was like, there's no way that's going to happen. You know, I love the show, but I do enjoy sunlight. See, you're a lot better than me because, I'm telling you right now, I wouldn't even get out of bed if I was off on a Saturday without football, but I'd finish that show. I promise you. I will shamelessly binge, and I won't even turn my bedroom light on.
And I've debated watching Game of Thrones because I know for a fact that I would like it. Like, it's just one of those shows that I know that I would like.
You absolutely would.
But like I said, it takes commitment. And if I'm going to commit to a show, I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to give it my full attention. That's why I would rather watch movies, but I sometimes have trouble just taking 3 hours out of my day just to watch a movie. But like with the TV show thing, like especially long dramas, the long drawn out, you know, that especially on that, you know, an hour long, those are difficult because you have to invest. But for me, the easiest thing to do, if I'm going to put a TV show on and take a nap to it, it's always going to be a sitcom. It's going to be 30 minutes. There's going to be a laugh track. It's not going to be serious. It's going to be something I've already seen. I do it a lot with friends.
Yeah, the only person that knows more quotes in Friends than me is my fiance.
And I think that you guys know, and see, I was the newest. See, my wife loves Friends, and she's the one that got me into Friends. I didn't watch Friends until, as old as the show is, I didn't watch Friends until we started dating, and then all of a sudden we started dating. I started watching more Friends, and now I love Friends.
See, I grew up on my dad and my mom loved that show, and they're not together. They loved it separately because they've been separated since I was like 5, but it started in 93. That show ended in 2003. That show ended when I wasn't even 12 yet, and it's so relatable to me now.
So relatable. So, every part of it. And but that's what I it's either on TBS in the afternoon and I'll turn it on, or if it's not on, and a lot of times on Mondays. Mondays are the worst because on Mondays all that's on is Bob's Burgers in the afternoon on TBS, and I don't want to watch that. Man, I'm not going to take a nap to Bob's Burgers. I'm going to take a nap to Friends.
I realize more and more and more that I'm changing in my ways of TV. I've always been really stubborn. I wanted to have cable. I don't have, like, traditional cable. I've got a different version. I've got PlayStation View. But I have to have TV. I have to have the option to watch live TV. But I'm telling you right now, I hardly ever watch live TV. I'll go home and put on SportsCenter on my phone rarely anymore. If I have a moment to breathe between, you know, working so much, I'll go home and put on Netflix or HBO Now to watch Game of Thrones. I almost rarely watch live TV, but I've got this thing in my head to where I have to have it just in case. Like I've got to have the option to be caught up and be in the know, even though I'm not. I have the option. I just never use it.
And the media has gone. It's gone so digital, and fewer and fewer people are getting cable because of the fact that you can just watch Netflix or, you know, Apple TV or Hulu and all that stuff. But I've always said, you know, I've told my wife, you know, when we get, and we have cable at her parents' house where we live, and my parents have cable, but I've always said we have to get some sort of cable because I have to watch sports at some point.
Right.
That's the only thing that keeps me in the cable is, Like, I have to watch sports. Same. I have to be able to watch my sports on, and not just now, because sports are becoming almost like universal, yeah, especially football now, because during football season, you get Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then Thursday night, you get Thursday night NFL and Thursday night college football. Then on Friday night, you get college football. So you're going Tuesday and Wednesday without football, and then mid-season, when you get Tuesday and Wednesday night Maction from the MAC, it's all week. There's all week football every day. And
Aaron, bringing up the Maction. We're not even in football season. That's how ready for football we are. You had to bring up the Maction.
Yeah, like Tuesday, you get that Tuesday night. You know, most of the time it's going to just – or the Sun Belt will play sometimes on Tuesday Pac-12 and Wednesday 12
after
night.
Dark on Saturday nights. You know what I mean? Like, it's not – even on Saturdays, it's not Saturday anymore and then a primetime game. You got the primetime game, and then you got Pac-12 after dark. You know what I mean? It's all the time. And that brings me, like you mentioned, you said the digital media is just growing and growing to where you don't you can be in the know and catch up without live TV and without cable. Why the hell can we not include streaming views in ratings? Like, why don't they do that? There's no way they don't have the technology to do that. A lot of the times you see there's always asterisks by the ratings or something like that doesn't include digital streaming. And why? How can we not include that yet? Like, how do you not know how many? I can tell you that I'm streaming. Just about any game I watch is on a stream. So I'm not included in any of the ratings because I stream all my games. How? In the era that we're in now, where potentially when the TV contracts run up for college football in the next 4 or 5 years, places like, or companies like Amazon and realistically even Facebook and Twitter are realistically in the running to have the rights to these college football games.
Well, speaking of Amazon, one of the Thursday night NFL games is going to stream on Amazon Prime this year.
Twitter did a live stream of like 4 or 5 Thursday. It might have been more Thursday night football games, but I at least watched 4 or 5 on Twitter live last year. These digital streaming and these apps and the social media are legitimately in the running to actually pay and carry football games and take them away from Fox, CBS, but we can't include those in the ratings?
I think there has to be some sort of way to involve these to get those, number one, to get them in the ratings, because I'm a big ratings person, and we haven't talked about really ratings yet since we've started this new show. But back when we had our podcast, I would always bring up, you know, different little things about ratings on the show.
You're also a Nazi that likes the NFL more than college, so.
Well, I just think the NFL sometimes is higher quality, I think, and they get, I don't know, I sometimes enjoy the atmosphere a little better. But it's very close. You act like you and another one of our good friends, especially, really bag on me for that. And I'm like, guys, it's not really that big. You act like I hate college football when I say that.
That's how it feels sometimes. Now, the NFL. I agree with you. The NFL, you get the best of the best. You get the best athletes at every position out there on the field, and that's why it's almost always a one score game, or. You know, a team always has a chance to come back in the fourth quarter and lead a fourth quarter comeback. But it's just, even though the talent level is so good in the NFL, that's almost the downside for me, because it's almost so predictable that it might be a 14-point game going into the fourth quarter. Oh, well, that team's probably going to come back and win, or it's going to come down to a field goal. The NFL is too predictable to me now.
I think college football has become at least somewhat predictable in a lot of aspects as well, but I don't know. For me, with the NFL, it's hard to beat a Sunday night football game with Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth calling in on NBC. It's really hard to beat. Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit do a heck of a job on Saturday nights, but that a lot of times depends on what game it is. Like sometimes, like what teams, like when Alabama and Florida State play. That's going to be as good as it gets all season. It's going to be fantastic when they call that game in week one. It's going to be fantastic. But for the rest of the season, almost at least on ESPN, the standpoint, they're going to have their best game on September the 2nd or whatever, the first weekend. And they're not going to have another game like that all year, probably.
Disagree, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
And
like
potentially,
the,
if teams
the good
keep
games
winning,
are few and far in between.
You could a game could set up where there's a, like a top five. There's probably going to be a top. There's for sure going to be a top 10 matchup on a Saturday night. Possibly a top five, but this is like number one and three, is it?
Yeah.
I mean,
I get what you're saying. It's a good matchup, and it's probably going to transpire into that. I get that, but and those are few and far in between when it comes to college football. In the NFL, you get the best of the best athletes every week against each other. But I mean, to say what you said about that game, that obviously not true. I mean, because you've got Oklahoma, Ohio State coming week two. You got Auburn, Clemson coming week two. Texas, USC is just, you know, Texas isn't a highly ranked team, and they got a lot of question marks around them, and so does USC, in my opinion. But, you know, you get those the best thing about college for me that the NFL, you can say, has, but it means more in college, the tradition of college football. And there are things that you might like the NFL better for, but the fact that they're just different from each other, those differences, even though the difference might favor the NFL – that's why I love college football, because it's not the NFL. I don't want to watch, you know, a mini version of the NFL and then turn around on Sunday and watch the same thing. I like the differences in college football. I like the fact that they have, you know, tradition that stems from forever ago and means something. That to me, I love the differences in college football.
And I like the differences too, like that. And also the play, you're right about that. I mean, obviously we say the NFL has the best athletes at every position. But in college, they play differently. The game is played differently with, you know, these, you know, spread it out. You know, they just the offenses and the defenses all function differently. In the NFL, every offense is kind of a version of themselves. Like, each team runs kind of the same thing. Not really, but it's very similar in the way everything's functioned. But I think it's just a matter of taste.
I can understand. And the best part about college football that the NFL doesn't have is storming the field, because it can be great and it can be stupid, like BYU storming the field after beating an awful Mississippi State team last year. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll set you up for the next hour of Tony Mac and the Triplet right here on Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Back, Tony Mac and the Triplet. Hour number one coming to a close rather quickly. Pretty good hour. Once it's amazing what you can do when you got a working microphone over here. But all right, well, it's a good first hour. Got an even better second hour coming up for you. We're going to break. It's probably going to take the rest of the show. We're going to break down our best quarterback situations in the SEC, and that doesn't necessarily mean who do you think is the best quarterback in the SEC, which that will play a large part in it, because that's part of, you know, the quarterback situation. But it'll just include, for some guys, it includes what you're being plugged into, your backup situation, maybe even your offensive line has something to do with it, how many guys you actually have, because there's some guys on this list that they're pretty much it. Because everybody behind them is transferring, they're gone. You really don't. You're the only talent left, and that might not necessarily bode well for everybody. But we're going to jump into that. And LSU is actually one of those programs, because they've had so many transfers. I think there's a list I was reading earlier. I think they've had 12 since 2000, and that includes the Nick Saban and Les Miles era. But more notably, here recently, in the future, Brandon Jennings transferring before the 2016 season, and then you had
Anthony Jennings,
I'm sorry, and Brandon Harris transferring last year, and then now you have I can't remember the kid's name now, but another quarterback gone, and he's actually going to EMCC for Last Chance U. But what was his name? Lindsey Scott was his name. That's who I was trying to think of. So, and Danny Etling, as far as talent-wise goes, he's all they have. But, I mean, is that enough? I mean, sure, he was a starting guy last year. He won the starting job after, week three? But what does that really mean? I mean, congratulations. You know who your starting quarterback is. And when you return experience, you're always excited to return experience. But that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to get better. I think that we've reached the peak with Danny Etling that we've reached with just about, well, not any other quarterback, but there's a lot of quarterbacks you can compare that to. Sean White, you know, he played at Auburn. And he's still there, but Stidham's, you know, got the reins of that offense. But he never really took that stride to get that much better, just because I think we saw what he was. That's all he was. And he wasn't awful, but he wasn't going to get better. Landry Jones at Oklahoma never took that next step. He's third all time in college football career passing yards.
And I think those kind of guys, especially Sean White, they're fine. They're good quarterbacks. They're decent, but they just have low ceilings. And sometimes when a guy has a low ceiling, you can't, there's nothing you can do about that. When you have a low ceiling, you're as good as you're going to get at one point. And I think that's what Sean White did last year. He reached the ceiling. He was having a very efficient season last year before, and he's injury prone, or he was last year. But I think just guys with low ceilings are just, I mean, you get what you're going to get out of them, which means they won't necessarily disappoint you, but they're not going to wow you either.
Well, a lot of times, you know, in Landry Jones' case and even Trevor Knight's case, you didn't expect them to have such a low ceiling. You know what I mean? The ceiling was a lot higher than what it actually was, and that turns into some disappointment. But we could actually make a list of that, too. You know, quarterbacks who turned out to have a low ceiling and really never reached more potential. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, more Tony Mack and the Triplet. We're going to break down the SEC quarterback situations right here. Sports Radio 730, 103.9, The Ump.
It's Tony Mack and the Triplet with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins! Touchdown, Auburn!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach! The good talent wants to play for him!
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mack and the Triplet.
Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplet. Hour number two, the final hour on a Saturday morning. It's been a great show so far. Yeah, I used great, even though we've had mic problems. It's been a great show so far, and I'm telling you right now, it's about to get that much better because we're going to dive into even more so into your favorite topic, SEC football. And what better way to start it? Next week, I like what we're doing here. We haven't done it live yet, but we've discussed it before the show and on the breaks, and I like how it's going. So next week we'll probably do the running backs of the SEC, the running back situations and everything else. But we're going to start with the best quarterback situations, 1 to 14 in the SEC. And it'll take all day if I talked about all 14 of mine and Aaron talked about all 14 of his. So what we're going to do is I'm going to start 14 to 1 and talk about some notable ones. And obviously I'll name my 14 to 1, you name your 14 to 1. We'll talk about some notable differences we have and why they're so different and what we believe, why we believe they are where they are. I'll start with mine. I think the 14th best or the worst quarterback situation in the SEC is Texas A&M. I don't like it because Trevor Knight, the grad transfer, pretty much the savior of that university, who never really hit his ceiling, the ceiling we talked about a second ago, he's gone. And before him, you had Kyle Allen and Kyler Murray, your two very talented, highly rated quarterbacks, transfer, gone. And behind them, nobody. I mean, you've got let me see these guys' names real quick. You've got Jake Hubenak, who's the only one with experience. Nick Starkel and Kellen Mond. Kellen Mond and Starkel, I believe, are freshmen. And Hubenak, the only one with experience. But if Hubenak is vying for the starting spot just based on experience and he doesn't have the job because of his experience, that tells me that his experience wasn't very good. He didn't show me anything that great. And the reason why I say that, it's not because these freshmen that are coming in behind him are that much better. I think Nick Starkel, I think, is like a 3-star quarterback. He's nothing special. The quarterback situation there was awful, and then they got saved by Trevor Knight coming in and just kind of being the glue for a year. And now we're about to see how bad that fallout for Sumlin is with all those guys leaving. And then at 13, I've got Vandy. 12, I've got Tennessee. Just basically because the experience that we just hadn't seen any of them yet. So 14, 13, and 12. I got A&M, Vandy, and Tennessee. 14 to 12. Who you got here?
All right. Well, at 14,
14, I'm starting with Tennessee. It's either going to be Quentin Dormady or Jarrett Garantano.
So you got Tennessee dead
last? Tennessee's my dead last, because not only did Tennessee lose Josh Dobbs, who was, you know, I think 4-year starter, basically, big-time leader for that team, they lost a lot of other pieces, not just at quarterback. So I think it's going to be extremely difficult on whoever wins that job. My guess is it's going to be Quentin Dormady, but at this point, I think that whoever wins that job has got their work cut out for them, and it's going to be tough.
Now, I agree with you that's the reason I had Tennessee at 12, low on the list, because, you know, really there's no experience. You lost Josh Dobbs, and none of these guys coming in really have much experience. But I think Dormady is going to be pretty good. I think he's going to be okay, at least. I think there's a lot of other things around Tennessee, like their offensive line. The fact that an NFL scout has called a lot of their teams soft. So I think there's a lot of things that are going to surround him and the rest of the quarterbacks this year. They're only going to be able to do so much. I just don't think the team's going to be that great as a whole. But as far as just him athletically and as a quarterback, I think he's okay. That's why I still had him at 12, though. So I'm in the same boat as you. You're not going to get me to come off them any higher than that because of the lack of experience.
All right, in 13, I'm right there with you. I had Hubenak and Mond and Starkle from Texas A&M because – mainly the only reason I put them ahead of Tennessee was because of Jake Hubenak's what little experience he does have. I think he will end up winning the job, but it's going to be a long season for Texas A&M, and we've already thought that Sumlin is done after this season. But losing, they got lucky with Trevor Knight after the other guys transferred, but I think Hubenak will win the job, but it's going to be a season to forget for A&M for sure.
Trevor Knight legitimately came in and saved his job last year. I mean, I know they went another 8-5 season, started 6-0 or whatever they did, but he saved his job because of the dumpster fire that was going on with all of his quarterbacks transferring. The most important position in football now, and you have all your guys leave. And Trevor Knight saved your life by coming in there, and at least he glued you together and had an 8-5 season, had you guys relevant for a good first half of the season. Now we're going to get to see what it was supposed to be a year ago. Now we get to see those guys, Trevor Knight leave. We get to see the crap heap of guys you have coming in because you've got some real big problem going on around A&M, and I think that's going to be even more magnified. Trevor Knight kind of put that on hold last year by coming in there for him, but we're going to see how bad Kevin Sumlin really has it over there at A&M and what he's really done. So I agree with you. I think this is Sumlin's last year, and I think it starts right there by having the worst quarterback situation in the SEC.
Well, they're my second worst behind and right in front of Tennessee. My number 12 is Vanderbilt and Kyle Shurmur, and that's just because, I mean, he's a decent quarterback for Vanderbilt, but he's – and he's going to lean on Ralph Webb all season. But, I mean, he is what you expect him to be at Vanderbilt as the quarterback.
I mean, as far as Vandy goes, if we were just specifically talking Vanderbilt and I was like, hey, Vandy's quarterback completed 54% of his passes. He threw for 2,400 yards, 9 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. That's a Vandy quarterback. If you're talking about Vanderbilt, you're like, that's not bad. It's Vanderbilt. Hey, congratulations. But we're talking about Vanderbilt in the entire SEC, and that's just not going to get the job done. So that's why I had them at 13. But, I mean, we have the same variation, just a little differently down there, but that's the bottom portion of the SEC. 11-9. We'll just go 11-9 here. 11 for me is LSU and Danny Etling, and a lot of it has to do with kind of the same situation at A&M. Who's behind him? The situation behind him. If last year Brandon Harris was the starting guy for the first three games, he lost to Wisconsin. Danny Etling was that guy behind him where they were like, okay, he's at least good enough. We have enough faith in him. There was enough talk behind him where if Brandon Harris isn't playing well, we're going to have to pull him and put this kid in. And they did, and Etling came in and looked okay. I mean, he was a manager for the most part and was beating up on the little guys like he should. But now who do you have behind him? Like, there's not that guy. If Etling starts screwing up, he's your guy. You're stuck with him. Lindsey Scott's gone. He's transferred. You're stuck with Danny Etling, and I think that's unfortunate because I think they're going to be in a position this year where they are stuck with Danny Etling. Last year, he was 160 of 269. That's almost 60%, which is okay. He only threw for 2,100 yards, which you really don't need to throw for that much, I guess, when you've got Leonard Fournette and Darius Geis behind you, but you've only got one of those guys this year, and he went 11 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. And this year, think about where he has to go. He has to go to Knoxville. He has to go to Tuscaloosa and Gainesville. Whether Tennessee's going to be that good and that physically opposing or not, that's a hell of a tough place to play. That's going to be an extremely loud place. You've got LSU, a team that you don't play very often, coming to your home. That's going to be a packed-out stadium, and it's going to be rowdy and loud. I don't think he survives either one in any of those games. I think Florida beats them. Alabama's going to knock their socks off, and I think Knoxville really rattles him, and he plays awful. And I think that's a close game anyway. And Tennessee might very well upset them, even though I don't have Tennessee doing that much this year. So LSU and Etling, he's down on the bottom portion of the SEC for me. Just no faith in him. 10 is Stephen Johnson from Kentucky. He's okay, but and what I do like about him is he can be a little mobile. Last year, he ran for 327 yards, I think, on 97 carries. So, I mean, he carries the ball often when he needs to. He almost 55% throwing, 13 touchdowns, 6 picks. I like seeing a guy from a smaller school like Kentucky in the SEC when it comes to football. I like seeing that he has a sizable amount of touchdowns compared to interceptions. You know, he's got double the touchdowns that he does interceptions. I like seeing that. That tells me that you're not at the most talented program, and that's just how it is. Your realistic mindset going into Kentucky is we know we're not going to win a whole bunch. Me here is trying to turn this program around, turn it into something. And when you can come in there and you know do that, you're realistically, you're pretty good. So that's why I've got him at 10. And then number 9, the Florida situation. The reason Florida is at number 9, I want to have them lower. But the reason they're at number 9 for me is the fact that I just think that the job's going to go to Zaire. And I, whether he couldn't cut it at Notre Dame or not, I think the kid's talented. The fact that they've got 7 people suspended, including their lead receiver, Antonio Callaway, for the opening game against Michigan, they've got him out, and they have 6 other guys that are suspended. He was a monster in the return game as well. They're going to have to plug a guy in there at quarterback that can make plays by himself. He can get out and create things with his feet because he's going to have a small window and a small talent of other guys around him to get the ball to and expect to make plays. So he's going to have to get out and make plays himself, and who better than Zaire, because he can move with his feet. Luke Del Rio is not going to do that for you. Felipe Franks is a physical specimen. He's like 6'6". He's big. He's got a hell of an arm. But I think Zaire's your best bet. So thinking that Zaire is going to be the guy, and the fact that you've got somebody like a presence like Felipe Franks behind you, and then your third option is your starting quarterback from a year ago that started the season until he got hurt, that's a decent situation. So I've got Florida at 9. Aaron, who you got 11-9?
Well, my number 11 starts where you just left off with Florida. I think Florida is a mess at quarterback because they've been a mess for about ever since McElwain got there. And even before that, the last few years of a Muschamp, because Jeff Driskel was terrible. I have never seen a quarterback in my life with less pocket presence than Jeff Driskel. He had his awareness rating on NCAA would have been 0. But ever since him, they've had a mess at the quarterback position. And I honestly think the job might go to Franks, but I do not think it's going to Del Rio. But it, for some reason, just would not shock me if McElwain decided to go with Del Rio over both of these guys. But I think that Florida, regardless of who they put out there at quarterback, they're going to do the same thing they've done the past 2 years under McElwain. They're going to win the East by playing defense because they've still got some talented guys on the defensive side of the ball. They're going to be very bad on it. They're going to be pitiful on offense, anemic at times. They're going to get beat by a couple. They're going to get blown out by a couple teams they shouldn't get beat by. Florida State is going to probably shut them out in the last week of the season in Tallahassee. But they're still going to go to Atlanta because they're going to lose to Georgia, but they're somehow going to win the tiebreaker and have a better record than not the tiebreaker, but have a better record in the SEC than Georgia. But I just don't see them doing very much at the quarterback spot or on the offense at all, especially with all the guys suspended, when Antonio Callaway has been their only source of offense for 2 full seasons now, and he's out for – is it just the first game, or how long was the suspension?
As far as I know, he's just suspended for the first game, but he's on his last leg there at Florida.
I know he's had some problems in the past.
He's had a lot of problems in his past, and to be honest with you, McElwain is a lot more forgiving than a lot of other coaches. I don't care what the talent was. If he was at Alabama or if he was under Bob Stoops in the Oklahoma's, if he was at Oklahoma in the Bob Stoops era, he would have been kicked off the team by now. So you had Florida.
My number 11 was Florida and Franks and Zaire. and I guess Del Rio. But my number 10 is Drew Locke from Missouri. And he had a decent season last year, but I just think that Missouri, and it also, and it, all this stems from my lack of respect for Missouri, just no respect whatsoever, and how it's an embarrassment that they're even in this conference, and what they've done, at least the past couple seasons, not even going to a bowl. He might be okay, but their team as a whole is pitiful, and I picked them to finish last in the East for a reason. So he's at my number 10, mainly not exactly because of him, but because of just their situation as a whole. And then my number 9 is Danny Etling. So I've got him at number 9.
Wow.
I think that LSU's been a quarterback away, quote unquote, for about a decade now. Really ever since the 9-6 game where they beat Alabama in 2011, they started the season with Jarrett Lee. Then they went to Jefferson in that game because Lee threw a couple of interceptions. That season, had they had a guy to play quarterback, I think they would have – I don't know, it just depends. But they didn't have a quarterback. That was the one thing that was missing from that team. And ever since then, they've just been waiting. Zach Mettenberger was as good as they had gotten to finding that guy, and they just don't have it. And they're some of the most talented – one of the most talented teams in the country, but the quarterback – hinders this team so much, and I think he does. And Etling is—he's one of those guys with a very low ceiling. You're just going to get out of him what he is right now. He is what you—he is who you thought he was last year, and that's what he's going to be this year.
Let me just say this about that: you had Florida at 11 and LSU at 9. Florida a year ago was 7th in passing yards and 6th in passing yards per game in the SEC. In passing yards, LSU was 13 out of 14. In passing yards a game, they were 13 or 12 out of 14. That means Austin Appleby, the combination of Austin Appleby and Luke Del Rio, were better than Danny Etling. And I think you've got two quarterback options in Felipe Franks and Malik Zaire who come in automatically better than Danny Etling. So that's why I have Florida at 9 above LSU.
I also think, though, that it's going off of the LSU hired a new offensive coordinator. They hired Matt Canada from Pitt, who I think is really going to I think it's going to benefit Danny Etling. I think it's going to benefit the system. And I like stability at the quarterback position just from a personal standpoint. Like, if you've got a guy, that's one reason why I put Texas A&M above Tennessee at 13 instead of 14, because at least Hubenak has played some.
I can understand the stability part of it, but you had just said that Danny Etling really doesn't have that high of a ceiling. I think two out of the three Florida quarterbacks already have a higher ceiling than Etling, and one of them was the one that doesn't have – that I don't think has that much higher of a ceiling than Danny Etling, combined with another quarterback that he had originally beaten out for the starting job before he got hurt, combined to be better than Danny Etling last year. So I think 1, 2, and 3 at Florida are better than Danny Etling. But, I mean, it's not really saying much because Florida's still 9 out of 14 for me, 11 out of 14 for you, and LSU's 11 out of 14. I don't think either situation's that great, but I think 1 through 3, I would take Luke Del Rio before I take Danny Etling.
I disagree there. I would take Danny Etling before I took Luke Del Rio. The only one that I'd probably – I mean, I might take Malik Zaire over Danny Etling, but I don't know. Like, I think it's all situational. I think you got to look at the type of offense, and you don't know what the new coordinator is going to do. At Florida, there was really no changes. I think you know what you're going to get out of Florida. I mean, you know what you're going to get out of Danny Etling, but I think that the offense is going to be a little bit different, at least, with a new coordinator, and it won't be stuck in that Cam Cameron offense that they had for so long.
I like the option of the mobility in a quarterback. So that's, and I think because of the whole suspension situation at Florida, that's why I think they're going to go with Zaire at least for week one. So that's why I like that situation a little better. Let's go 8 through 6 real quick, and then we'll get a break, and then we'll come back. 8 for me is Jake Bentley, South Carolina. I think this kid's got a lot of room to grow. Being at 8, I think that's really good. He completed 65.8% of his passes last year, 125 of 190, 1,400 yards, 9 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. This guy was supposed to be – wasn't he supposed to be a high school senior?
Yeah, I was going to bring it up. He was supposed to be a high school senior last year.
So I think the ceiling – the fact that he can come in and already do that at barely 18 years old is fantastic. So I think the ceiling for him – is really high, and I think he'll before it's all said and done, he'll find his way into some SEC record books. I like him at 8, and I like that situation to grow as that goes on. At number 7, I like Shea Patterson at Ole Miss. I think he's another guy that's eventually going to be high on that SEC list, even though his team is going in the wrong direction. But he's only at 7 for me because he only played in 3 games last year. For the most part, we watched Chad Kelly before he got hurt. But Shea Patterson, he came in just those 3 games, looked really good ahead of his age, just like Jake Bentley. And at number 6, I actually have Drew Locke from Missouri, and mainly just because of what they did last year. And total offense, even though Missouri wasn't that great, total offense in the SEC, they were ranked 3rd. 3rd in total offense. In passing yards a game, they were ranked 2nd, only behind Ole Miss and Chad Kelly, the combination of Kelly and Patterson. And they were also ranked, I think, 3rd in passing yards. So, top 3 in offense, they can really score over there in the East. SEC known for defense. The East really wasn't towards the end of the year last year because there were a bunch of high-scoring barn burners on that side of the SEC. And a lot of that had to do with Missouri. Drew Locke has Jamon Moore out there, and that's a good combination. And I expect them to be a top-5 offense again in the SEC. I like that situation.
And so starting for my number 8, I have Stephen Johnson from Kentucky. I think that he had a really good end to the season last year. Kentucky started really, really slow, but they really picked it up. And then he played really, really well in the upset win over Louisville. So I like Stephen Johnson. I think he's got a lot of upside with his mobility. So I like Kentucky at 8. That's why I picked him to finish a little bit higher in the East this year than they normally do. At 7, I also have Shea Patterson. Saw a lot of things I liked about him in those 3 games. But my number 6 is Jake Bentley. Because I think that what he was able to do, South Carolina was atrocious for a lot of the season last year. But when he came in, stepped in as a starter, they turned around, they upset Tennessee. They ended up going to a bowl game. Granted, they went to the Birmingham Bowl and lost to South Florida, but they were on track to go, 4-7 or 4-8. They were terrible. But he turned it around, and he had a really good season. Like you brought up his numbers, he had some really good numbers, and I think he's just going to grow as a passer and as a football player. So he's my number 6. I think he's got a ton of upside.
And we're going to take a – I like where we're at. We're about to get into the top 5. That's a perfect place to take a break. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to give you our 5 best quarterback situations in the SEC and why we think so. That's right here on Tony Mack and the Triplet, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. Back, Tony Mack and the Triplet. We left you guys giving you our 6 through 14 best quarterback situations in the SEC. I like Pie tweeted in and got in on the show, following on my laces. I like Hurts, but I'm not sure about Tua versus a live blitzing D. He looked great in the spring where there wasn't a rush, though. Well, we're going to get into that. Obviously, they cracked our top 5 because we didn't mention them. 14 through 6. So stay put, and we're going to tell you where we like them and why we like them there. Aaron, I'm going to give you 5 and 4, and then we'll get into our top 3. Number 5 for me is Jacob Eason in Georgia. I love the situation they have behind him. Jacob Fromm has was a commit to Bama, switched to Georgia, and they really like him there. All spring, they've really liked him, so the backup situation's good. The one reason that kept Eason at 5 for me was he shows a lot of promise, but at times he really didn't really show a love for football. He didn't show that he was into it like you would expect a quarterback in the SEC would. Still put up decent numbers, 2,400 yards, 16 touchdowns, 8 picks. If he actually – I think Jake Fromm is the best thing that could have happened to him because I think he came in there and showed that, hey, this guy cares. This guy – look what this guy can do by just caring about football more than you. And I think that's going to instill the love of football necessary to be a quarterback in the SEC. And I think he takes it a step further this season. And I think he improves those numbers. And I think Georgia's very, very good. Number 4 for me is Austin Allen at Arkansas. And the reason why he's so high is how freaking tough this kid was last year. This kid, the 2 years his brother was a starting quarterback, I think he took 14 sacks each year. I think it was a total of 28 sacks. By October last year, by mid-October, he had already taken 20 sacks last year. He had virtually no offensive line. at times, and he still completed 61% of his passes, 3,400 yards, 25 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. A little high on the interceptions, but the kid's tough. That's the biggest takeaway, and there are a lot of tough quarterbacks in the SEC, and Austin Allen is definitely one of them. So who's 5-4 for you?
What, five? I've got Nick Fitzgerald from Mississippi State, and I think that Fitzgerald could be higher on, and he's probably higher, and he's obviously higher on your list because you haven't mentioned him yet, and he's higher on some other lists, but he could also be lower on some lists. But I've got him at five because I think that he's a great dual threat. I think they ran the offense through him a lot last year, but I thought he made a lot of mistakes. He made some mistakes against BYU that cost him the game. I mean, this is a team that went 5-7 last year and still made it to a bowl game. And that's because the bowl system is terrible. And I mean, there's no reason a team that's 5-7 should get to a bowl, but they had a lot of problems and he turned the ball over a lot. And I just don't think his decision-making as far as like, just can he like making the big throws? Like, yeah, he's a big physical athlete. Give him the fourth and one. Yeah, give him the ball, let him run it. But if it's fourth and seven, tell him, you know, make a throw to this guy coming over the middle in a window. I don't know if I want to get that. I would obviously trust him more than some of these other guys, but I think his well roundedness as an athlete and a playmaker bumps him up on this list. But I don't. Can he make the big throws in crunch time this year to, you know, make it, get his team to a winning record is going to be a big question. So that's why I got him at five. And number four, I've got Jacob Eason. I think that Jacob Eason has, because we talked about low ceilings earlier, I think he's got one of the highest ceilings in the SEC. Big physical, big arm, talented. We saw some of it last year. We also saw him take some steps back. He played pitiful against Auburn, but he still won the game because thank you, Sean White, for throwing the game away on an interception. But he made some throws against Auburn at the end to help ice the game. But I think that when he takes that next step, that freshman to sophomore jump, like you were talking about, you know, Fromm comes in there to push this guy. I think that he has potential to be much better than Fitzgerald as far as pure quarterback, and especially he's got talent around him. Georgia's a talented team. Kirby Smart's done a good job bringing in some good players. So. That's why I've got him at number four.
Yeah, and I've got some comments about Fitzgerald that I'm going to mention, but I'll mention them whenever I get to them on my list. And now we're going to get into our top three. Obviously, there's one in the top three for you that's not, and there's, you know, we have a different top three. One team made it, one team didn't for each of us because you had Mississippi State out. Number three for me is Jared Stidham at Auburn. I like their quarterback situation mainly because. Listen how different they were in the SEC last year, passing and rushing. Passing yards a game, dead last, Auburn was. Dead last. Rushing yards per game, number one.
Dead last does not shock me whatsoever.
And they still went, what, 8-5?
They went 8-4 regular season, yeah. With the lost Oklahoma, they were 8-5.
So 8-5, in spite of Sean White, you have the best rushing attack yards per game-wise, and I think rushing yards-wise, they were top two, top three. So all you have to do in that situation is plug a competent quarterback in. You plug Jacob Eason in or somebody like that. Danny Etling probably produces the same as Sean White, maybe a tad more. But you replace him with anybody competent, then you've got a 10-win team maybe. Jared Stidham, I think, is more than competent. I think he's an extremely accurate arm. Small sample size we saw, I get that. But I think there's more to come. I think he is a guy that can run a zone read very well. He can get 7-8 yards at a time if he needs to, running the zone read. So I think they're in a very good situation there. You're plugging him into a team that's already complete. They just need a quarterback. He is the finishing piece. Defense, very good last year. I know who you're replacing. You're replacing Montrevious Adams and Carl Lawson. I get that. But they're still going to be good. It's not like they're going to go from best to last. They're going to be a very competitive defense. You've got one of the better offensive lines in the SEC, if not the best, top two, top three. You've got Noah Igbinoghene's coming along in the passing game, so you're going to have options. You've got two absolute bruisers of running backs in the backfield, the best rushing yards per game-wise in the SEC last year. And then you're telling me you get this transfer kid who's what? What's he going to be, a sophomore this year?
Yeah, he's coming in as a sophomore because he's. I think he sat out.
He was a freshman at Baylor, sat out last year, so technically got redshirted.
And took a redshirt year,
so
yeah.
He'll be a sophomore. I like their situation. I really do. So I've got Stidham at 3, and I think he eventually is – I don't think he ever falls farther than 3 as long as he's in the SEC at Auburn. Number 2, I have Nick Fitzgerald from Mississippi State. I really like this kid. Very big, and you mentioned that he's mobile. I think he's a lot more mobile than you think. 191 rushes for 954 yards were Jalen Hurts' numbers last year. Fitzgerald had 195 rushes for 1,375 yards. Yeah, he rushed the ball 4 more times than Jalen Hurts and had 400 more yards than he did. 7.1 yards a carry, 16 rushing touchdowns. I think he finished with like 3 more total touchdowns than Jalen Hurts. Am I saying he's better than Jalen Hurts? No, I'm not. I'm saying he's got some raw athletic ability. I mean, Jalen Hurts was a lot better as a passer. Jalen Hurts completed almost 63% of his passes. Fitzgerald completed 54%. 2,400 passing yards for Fitzgerald. Hurts had 2,700. I like Hurts a little better. I think Hurts is a little more athletic, and he's obviously just in a better situation around him. He's got better athletes in every aspect of the game around him. He's got better backups than Fitzgerald does. So that's why Alabama is my number one quarterback situation, because if Hurts goes down, you've got Tua, who everybody's already fighting to see. They want to see this kid get action. So Alabama and Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is the reigning SEC Offensive Player of the Year. Obviously, he's going to be number one. Is he perfect? No. I always used to say, like, at my other job, I go in. I'm a little older than the other guys at work. Right? Yeah, I bust tables, and I work my ass off. And people notice that I work hard. And when I mess up sometimes, you know, I might spill something. They'll laugh at me and be like, oh, you know, he's not perfect after all. And I always joke, and I say, you know, I never said that I was perfect. I just said that I was the best. The best isn't always perfect. I mean, when the Nick Saban's won, what, 4 national championships at Alabama? How many of them was he undefeated? 1. He's won 3 championships with a loss. So obviously, Hurts can be the best, but he's obviously not perfect. He's got some room to grow in the passing game, and I think he takes that step. But just remember, and all the deficiencies he has on the biggest stage in college football, his last possession, the last time he touched the freaking ball, he ran it in for the go-ahead score. So don't doubt that kid. Alabama has the best quarterback situation in the SEC. Aaron, your top 3, please.
Well, my top 3 it was really difficult to decide on a top 3 because I think that any one of these could particularly be number 1. They could all be number 2 and they could all be number 3, but I had to go with in order, and you're right about the if we're going situationals, that's kind of was the thought process here. My number 3 is Austin Allen from Arkansas. And he could easily be the best quarterback in the SEC as far as managing, you know, not – I mean, I know he threw a lot of picks last year, but he was under a lot of duress. He obviously took a ton of sacks.
He's a very tough kid.
Extremely tough. Just good mentality, smart. I think he's better than his brother was with less talent around him to work with. So, and I think he could – like I said, he could be the best – but he has the least talent out of these three guys at my top around him. So I think a lot of Austin Allen. My number 2 is Jared Stidham, and the only reason that I bumped him up to 2 was because of recently that Auburn named him the starting quarterback, and I think that was a good move because I don't think that people realize how important it is to name a starting quarterback with at least a couple weeks to go before the season starts, because if you go into a season and you don't name a starting quarterback, and you're that first game of the season, and nobody knows but the coach who's going to be the starting quarterback, that not only messes with the psyche of you, messes with the psyche of the guys at quarterback, and the whole entire team. It messes with the team. Remember what happened with Ohio State and Cardale Jones and JT Barrett, that disaster?
Yes, I do.
So I think that was important, and I think that helps Stidham. I think that helps the team. You're right. They had the best rushing offense in the SEC last year. Worst passing. I think that he will definitely help that. And I think if the receivers stay healthy, that they'll have a big year. And if he is as advertised, Auburn will have a good season. But I'm sketchy about just saying he's as advertised. I'm kind of, You can. I'm smelling it. I can sniff that I'm getting closer to the Stidham bandwagon, but I don't.
Close. You have them number two in quarterback situations in the SEC.
I think a lot of that's pure optimism. So I'm kind of getting on the bandwagon here. I still want to stay because I generally am a pessimistic fan.
It's true. So the fact that you have this high is shocking to me. So I try to be
a little bit more optimistic about this for sure. I think that his like we talked about ceilings. I think he's got a very high ceiling.
I think so too.
Jeremy Johnson had a very high ceiling, but we saw what happened there as well.
Before you go on to number one, I just wanted to piggyback onto your point there, talking about Jared Stidham. And how important it is to name a starting quarterback. A lot of these guys were already really starting to back the leadership of Jared Stidham before they announced the starting quarterback. We all knew it was just a formality that he got announced the starting quarterback. We all knew the moment that was why he got recruited to go to Auburn was to be the starting quarterback. But I think you're right. The fact that they announced it a couple weeks before it just speaks wonders for them going forward because. This is a guy that everybody got behind as a leader. They're like, this guy's got great leadership. We hope he wins the battle. Then he wins the battle. So for 2 weeks, you're like, okay, we know it's our guy. It's the guy we wanted in the first place. We love this guy. Let's go out there and work harder and make sure we're in the best position to make him successful. And I think that is going to be a fantastic thing for Auburn. That's another reason I think they go into Death Valley week two and take down Clemson. I think there's going to be a lot of unsteady fans after the Georgia Southern game. Because, you know, they run a deadly triple option, and Auburn's 38-point favorites in that game. They're not going to beat them by 38 points. I don't think so. So everybody's going to come out of that game with higher expectations than – or they're going to come out with shaky expectations. Well, they didn't beat Georgia Southern like we thought they would. It's okay. A triple option. Watch Tennessee probably get beat by Georgia Tech week one. Triple option is a really tough thing to figure out. So, and I think that's going to speak even more to when they go into Death Valley. People are going to be on their heels like, well, you know, here goes Auburn again. It's Auburn like we thought. Jared Stidham, just another quarterback that didn't pan out at Auburn. I think they're going to go in and shock everybody and beat Clemson in Death Valley.
Well, I would obviously love it if they did take down Clemson on the road in week two. But and number one, obviously, I've got Alabama. I've got Jalen Hurts at number one. And I think that he's obviously the best athlete out of the three guys at the top. While I don't think he's got some growing to do for sure in the passing department, but the fact that he doesn't have to be great, he just has to be good enough for the guys around him to take over the game. Because that's why I've seen some lists with Austin Allen at number one because of how little help he has compared to all the help that Hurts has around him. But that's part of the situation, and I think that he has some growing to do, and I think if they're gonna win a national championship this year again, that and there's always that when Alabama wins, whenever they win all these games, or especially when they end up winning the national championship, there's that game during the season where typically they don't lean on their quarterbacks to win games. They lean on defense. They lean on controlling the ball, running the ball, being efficient. There's always that one game that their quarterback has to go out and win. And 2 years ago, Jake Coker did it against Tennessee, if nobody remembers. So he's going to have a game like that he's going to have to do that. And I think that he's definitely poised and built enough to do that because he played extremely well, at least in the final minutes of the national championship game last year. So, and obviously they have a great backup as well. So, or who's supposed to be, if he's as good as advertised, then they do have a great backup. But Alabama rounds up my top three. Jalen Hurts at one, Stidham at two, and Austin Allen at three are mine.
My favorite part about Auburn having a chance to beat Alabama that I think is that everybody likes better, anybody that's pulling against Alabama, and if you told me that the two teams that had the best chance to beat Alabama this year were LSU and Auburn, who are you going to pull for more and put the most hope into? It's going to be Auburn because the reason why they have a chance to beat Alabama isn't based strictly off defense like it was a year ago for LSU. LSU was 10-0. Everybody was just hoping LSU could stop Alabama long enough just to put a score on the board and beat them. With Auburn, it's a different dynamic. Auburn has a chance to beat Alabama. Their defense is going to be good, but when Auburn has a chance to beat Alabama, it's because they have a chance to outscore them. You don't have to wait. You don't have to hold your breath every time Alabama has the football and hope that Auburn's defense can get another stop so they can finally put that deciding touchdown on the board. It's a different dynamic because when Auburn has the ball, you're just as hopeful as Alabama fans are when they have the ball, because they have a lot of options. They have a good chance to score. They have many different ways they can score. When you have a quarterback, a good quarterback, a good competent quarterback in a Gus Malzahn system, that's what's so beautiful about it. You take the pressure off your defense. There's a good enough chance on both sides of the ball that you're going to get the job done. Where in the Alabama LSU game, you're hopelessly, you know, just praying that LSU can put up a score of like, okay, is this going to be the drive? Maybe they'll
get lucky. Can they score on defense?
Yeah, maybe they'll get lucky, or they'll scoop up a Hurts fumble or pick him off. Auburn, you're like, okay, now defense, good job, get off the field. Here comes the offense. You know, you're not putting all your faith in one side of the ball. So that's what makes Auburn having a quarterback awesome, because it just makes that a more complete game when it comes down to the Iron Bowl. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it's going to be the last segment of the show. We're going to set you guys up for a great week and just one more week before week zero of college football. We'll run you down what's going on next weekend in college football, kind of an appetizer before we get to the real thing. That's right here on Sports Radio 730 103.9 The Ump. This is Tony Mack and the Triplet. Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet getting ready to send you guys on your way. It's about five more minutes and we'll let you guys continue your Saturday. Next week we'll be able to tell you, go enjoy some football after the show. It's not the best football in the world, but it's football.
Week zero. It's pretty exciting. Eventually, and we were just talking about this earlier, how last year, everybody remember you had that game between Hawaii and Cal that happened in Australia like a week and a half, like a week before the Thursday night games, before Labor Day weekend. And now this year, they're having all these, like a slate, an entire slate of games on Saturday to the 26th. And I brought up the point earlier to Antonio, that they're eventually going to move the college football opening week to the 26th and not Labor Day weekend, and have Labor Day weekend be week two. So I think that's what's eventually going to happen for college football, because people are just demanding this football earlier. So earlier and earlier every year. And
that's really kind of what we've gotten into. That's how the media is nowadays. It's who can all get there first. It's not necessarily the most accurate. And that translates into live entertainment. We want it. We want more, and we want it now. You're right. Everything's getting away from. It'll get away from Labor Day weekend eventually, because people want it sooner. They want it now. And if you start teasing us on the 26th, everybody's going to say, "Well, we want actual football that day." So eventually, you're going to have next year. You're going to have like one marquee game there, and then you're going to have a couple more moved over there. Then eventually, the whole freaking weekend's going to be moved over there. And you know what? I'm okay with that. Heck, plug in an extra regular season game and let's do it. Let's do it there. It's okay. You don't have to pass me the mic. I'm just going to unplug. Take the time to unplug and replug this one in, and let this mic revel in its shame of being an awful microphone. Let's try to take a look at that schedule. I'm trying to pull it up. Okay, here we go. Saturday, August 26th. Oregon State at Colorado State. Awesome.
Possibly the best game of the day, though, coming up at 2:30, the first one.
Wow. You're that quick to count out Portland State, BYU?
It's going to be a classic matchup. Of course, earlier we were looking at this, and I pointed out the matchup of Hawaii and UMass,
and you said that's going to be a barn.
It is. That one's going to be a close one, because that's two teams who are not very good, traveling literally maximum distance. Hawaii is traveling all the way from Hawaii all the way up to Massachusetts to play UMass. What an intriguing game.
Then South Florida. That'll be fun just because we get to see...
we get to watch Quentin Flowers and...
Charlie Strong
and USF in that game.
At the always big powerhouse San Jose State, no doubt. So
go Spartans. The real Spartans of San Jose State.
And then we're saving...
Michigan State.
We're saving a little Pac-12 after dark for you. You know what I mean?
Yes, but Stanford is traveling to Rice. Stanford. In what world does Rice get to host Stanford?
I guess when you're Rice and you've built up so many ass-kickings over the years against like Texas beating the doors off of you every year, Texas A&M beating the doors off of you every year, you finally get to cash those in and get to host somebody, so you so your home crowd gets the pleasure of watching your ass get beat at home. So that way, whenever whenever you're at Texas or at Texas A&M, and the Longhorns are literally handing you your rear end. They don't have to travel all the way. You don't have to carry your own butt home to hand it to your fans. Your fans. This year, Stanford at Rice will just be able to physically bend you over, remove your bottom, and hand it to the crowd there. You don't have to wait for it to come home. So that, I guess that's the upside there.
But I guess let's don't count out the Owls yet. Maybe
I'm going to go ahead and count the Owls.
Maybe a little surprise.
Out. No Christian McCaffrey, you know what I mean? Hey, yeah, no, absolutely, they couldn't. was Rice the team when Menzel got suspended for a half?
Yes,
I thought so, and it was actually kind of close until Johnny Football came back in and put a spanking on him. But none of these games are going to be close or probably that entertaining. But I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now, watch it and love every freaking minute of it. Because it's football. We don't get football that often. It's the only sport where we beg for it more often than we get it. We don't beg for the NBA all that often. I mean, right now I'm like, yeah, I can use the NBA would be kind of cool right now, but we get enough NBA. We get too much baseball. We get enough hockey. We get enough of the other sports. Football is the only sport we don't get enough of. So we need to cherish it while it's here.
Football is the only season I'm pretty sure that the off season is longer than the actual season.
It absolutely is.
And the rest of the sports, the off season is shorter.
All right, guys. Next week, like we said, we're not going to be previewing these games, but when we're done, we'll send you off to watch these games. Next week, we're going to bring you our best running back situations in the SEC. For Aaron, I'm Tony Mack. This has been Tony Mack and the Triplet right here on Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. Go enjoy your weekend, everybody.